Welcome back to The Rush. That's the New Radicals, and you got a couple New Radicals with you today. Teddy Wilson and Richard Krause with you till 6 p.m., and very glad you're with us, and very glad it's time for our Smart Speakers panel. Always look forward to it. We're joined by Aaron Morrison, longtime political strategist and principal at Morrison Comms, and Amanda Galbraith, principal at Navigator and host of Free For All Fridays. Welcome to you both.
Hello, hello. So we're talking to start things off about Pierre Poilievre and the non-confidence motion that he plans to levy against the Liberal government in a call to sort of get rid of this carbon tax. Aaron, I'll start with you. This sounds to me like a plan that will not only not work, but I don't think it's going to have any real impact on voters either. I'm not really exactly sure why Poilievre would proceed with this. What's your take on it?
Yeah, I think it's pretty disingenuous. It's, you know, it's another way for Pierre Poilievre to sort of beat the carbon tax drum, you know, to continue to raise that issue. And you know, to be fair, he's getting a lot of juice out of it. But honestly, when it comes to cost of living, Mr. Poilievre refuses to take on grocery store CEOs that are raking in billions of dollars. He keeps voting no on any cost-saving measure that has come to a vote, even free dental care for children and seniors. He voted no on that. And we still don't have a credible climate plan from the Conservatives at all, right? I mean, wildfire season has literally started earlier than ever before. So I think, you know, we will be getting to an election soon enough. It certainly looks by the numbers that Canadians will be looking to replace Justin Trudeau. Mm-hmm. And I think what they need to hear from Pierre Poilievre and Jagmeet Singh is credible plans for the environment and for cost savings for families.
Amanda, the Poilievre camp has been very good about branding, axe the tax and all that stuff seems to be very much front and center right now in all their social media feeds and that kind of thing. But like all branding, stuff gets tired after a while. Is this just another way of refreshing it without changing the message particularly?
I mean, with respect, I just take issue with most of the commentary that was just said, including the idea that like Pierre Poilievre has not voted for a single measure to save families' money. Like what about a tax reduction or any manner of things? I don't think candidly sending the federal government chasing after grocery CEOs is going to end in anything. And we've seen that with the federal government's chasing their own tail on it. As far as a carbon tax, the reason it's working is because people are really frustrated and scared about how they're going to be able to pay their bills and pay their groceries. And 25% increase in a tax is going to raise, like, if you drive a minivan, it's going to cost you $10 to $12 more once this thing goes through. Like, that's not insubstantial for some families. Mm-hmm. So I think it's not about refreshing anything. It's about, this is something people care about. They're dialed into it. It is by far the most unpopular policy across the country. And the carbon tax is not the be-all and end-all of environmental legislation. No one's saying Joe Biden doesn't have a serious environmental plan. He doesn't have a carbon tax. I'm not like, so I think there's lots of ways to go at this. But the idea that this is just some branding exercise for the Conservatives, certainly they're good at pushing this message, but they've been on affordability for a long time, well before the government has. And it's because this is something people care about. And frankly, I think they should keep talking about it because it's important.
We're talking with our smart speakers, Aaron Morrison and Amanda Galbraith. And let's keep a focus on Ottawa developments at the federal level that will impact all of us here. The federal Liberal government slated, I believe today, to table electoral reform legislation. This isn't like a huge overhaul of the federal voting system that was at one time promised by the prime minister. This seems like a smaller developments that are a bit more tinkering around the edges. But Aaron, what would be entailed in this, and have they tabled it yet?
I haven't seen it tabled yet. I think it is supposed to be tabled at some point today. It might be happening literally now. Mm-hmm. For me, to be honest, if Canadians are Charlie Brown, the Liberals are Lucy holding the football when it comes to electoral reform. These folks have promised it again and again and again and again. I think it was in the Liberal Red Book going that far back, right? They've never delivered on it. I think what we are likely to see today is tinkering around the edges, and that might be good tinkering around the edges, but it certainly doesn't get at the heart of what the electoral reform fans have been asking for, mm-hmm. which is a system to consider getting rid of first past the post.
Right, and bringing in more proportional representation to the system. A nice Red Book reference, by the way. That's a bit of a blast from the past. Wow. and in terms of what's being reported as the potential elements of this legislation, it would look at allowing an expanded three-day voting period during general elections, could allow voters to cast their ballots at any polling place within their riding, and improving the mail-in ballot process. Amanda, what do you think of this potential legislation?
I mean, it's like, sure, it's sensible, but I think to Aaron's point, liberals have been promising substantive electoral reform for decades broadly. And then every time they gain government, it's like, oh, wait a minute, it's harder to win the way we win with first past the post. So we're going to keep it the way it is.
Right.
So I kind of shrug and roll my eyes at this. Like, I also I do question, we saw this week, the NDP certainly, I think, feel like they're flexing their muscles a lot. Federally, a dissolution of a first past the post system would benefit them greatly if they were to actually push for a proportional representation, for example. And weirdly, they're not seeming to be doing that. So I'd be curious as to why that's not something they're pushing harder for.
Aaron, talking about FIFA, talking about the World Cup, Mayor Olivia Chow said the games must be financially responsible in what may be the biggest understatement of the week. Do you think that there is a chance that the city is going to be able to manage this so that they come in a financially responsible way?
I think that the boat has probably sailed on financially responsible. But I think what Mayor Olivia Chow is saying is, can we be more financially mm-hmm. responsible? I think really what she's saying, and I have to be honest, I like her attitude on this. She could sulk. She could say, this is not my mess. It's not my problem. And instead, really what she's saying is, okay, I would not have chosen this. This is not the way I would have done it. But it is happening. So let's make the best of it. Let's make it exciting. Let's lean in. And let's get to work figuring out how to make it as affordable as we possibly can.
Amanda, are you excited for the World Cup coming here, or do you think it's a big waste of money?
I actually like the World Cup. I was not a fan of Expo. I really questioned an Olympic bid because we dealt with that when I was in the mayor's office. I thought, oh, this will be exciting. And then I realized how much time it sucked out of my day when we were talking about a bid. And I was like, yeah, you know what? No, I don't want to do this anymore. But I do think the World Cup to me is the biggest sporting event in the world, mm-hmm. truly. Like, it unites the entire world. The idea that it's being hosted here to me is exciting. I'm not even a soccer fan, but I find going around to the Toronto communities, like Little Portugal, Little Italy, during the World Cup is a blast. I can't even imagine what it'd be like to have the games here. So I actually think this city, like, if we want to be a world-class city that does world-class things, I think a World Cup is a very good thing to be hosting. And I think candidly, we need to just buck up a little bit and recognize that in order to do those big things, you have to spend a little bit of money to do them. And I think this is a case where it's worthwhile.
Do you worry at all, though, as we get closer to the date, and we've just got about a minute left before this break, but do you worry as we're still so far out and there's already been so many issues, do you worry a little bit as we get closer to the date, like this is just going to keep cascading here, Aaron?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I mean, look, today gave me a little bit of hope that maybe we'll start to move in a better direction, that they've got their eye on the prize. But absolutely, nobody has ever worried about things spiraling into control.
Right. Yeah. And Amanda, obviously, Mayor Olivia Chow did not make the decision to bring this here. That was former Mayor John Tory. But do you think if things get bad and if issues continue to grow with this, will this stick to the current mayor at all as a negative issue, or is she able to distance herself from it just politically in terms of optics?
Well, just to correct, city council voted for it, right? The mayor doesn't have the authority to do this on his own. So right. There are people building. He didn't just unilaterally decide to bring the World Cup in. Right. I think you need to be careful about it. But I think just like the Pan Am Games, people are going to complain about it until it's here. And then all of a sudden everyone gets all excited. So whoever's in office in 2026, you're going to get all the glory.
Yeah, I got it. Richard and I disagree. I'm actually pretty excited for it, and I'm okay with it. You not so much.
I'm a little less so, but, you know, come 2026, I'll be wearing a FIFA sweatshirt, I'm sure, probably dancing down College Street.
It's going to be great.
We're listening to The Smart Speakers. That's Aaron Morrison, longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms, and Amanda Galbraith, principal at Navigator and host of Free for All Fridays. When we come back, we're going to talk about a Toronto high school that has no classrooms or due dates. We'll see what they think about that. Stay with us. Lots more to come with Richard Krause and Teddy Wilson. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Richard Krause. That's Teddy Wilson over there. If you are excited about the eclipse, but you can't find glasses anywhere, I've just seen on Twitter that the Toronto Public Library has free eclipse glasses.
Wow, I'm going to get some because I don't have any. Well, I'm excited about the eclipse, but you're not.
I'm not so much, but maybe I'll get some free glasses out of the deal.
Yeah, you should.
But the Toronto Public Library, free eclipse glasses. We're in the midst of smart speakers right now. Pardon me. Aaron Morrison joins us, longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms, and Amanda Galbraith, principal at Navigator and host of Free for All Fridays from noon until 2 right here.
That's right. So we want to talk to you about a topic that we took calls on earlier, and we got a lot of calls on this, a lot of really passionate opinions on both sides. It's a Toronto high school with no classrooms or due dates, Mary Ward Catholic Secondary School. It's the only regular school in Toronto that is fully dedicated to what they call self-directed learning. So no traditional classrooms or timetables. As I said, students pick when they're evaluated. No bells ring to signal changes of periods. Students can sit where they want and create their own assignments, but they all still meet provincial curriculum requirements. And apparently this school, on average, does pretty well on EQAO tests. So Amanda, let's start with you. What do you think of this learning model? Is there something to it, or kind of have we lost the plot?
This is another sign of the downfall of civilization. Like, wow. I don't understand what is happening here. Like they're literally just wandering around. Oh, I have to keep myself focused, or I just hang out with my friends all day. Like, I know that's very nice. I wish that, like, if life worked that way, that's fine. But we all know that it doesn't. You guys just don't wander into the radio station and start broadcasting whenever you feel like it. You have a set time. You have to prep. Like, I just don't see how this. Candidly, I think it's the thought is it's a lovely sentiment, but I don't see how the job of high school is to prepare you for life, including I think work ethic is particularly important. And I know they reference the fact that kids fail out because they don't focus, they don't whatever meet the, even though there's no tests, whatever happens in there. But I just, no way, I would never send my child there. And I just think it's a recipe for disaster, candidly.
Well, what do you think, Aaron? And I mean, it is interesting though, that these students tend to do, it sounds like better than average on EQAO tests. So what do you think? Do you feel same way as Amanda, or do you think they're onto something here?
With Amanda on this one. The EQAO also caught my attention. Apparently, the students here are performing about 10 points better in math, literacy, and sort of your other standard EQAO testing subjects. So I think that's pretty good evidence. We're hearing that there's no discipline issues or virtually no discipline issues at this school. You know, if you look around at nearly every other high school in Ontario, that would be a miracle. So I don't know. I think they may be onto something. But I have to say, I think this kind of learning, it's not going to work for every child. You know, some kids work differently. There are some kids in this environment that I think would just do nothing. I think they'd really take advantage of this. I think some students could really slip through the cracks, you know, with this level of supervision. And where I do agree with Amanda here is that, you know, the job of being a student is really to get prepared for adulthood, to train for a job market. And, you know, I just think having a job is not a self-guided tour. So let's not set these kids up for a real disappointment when they get into the working world.
Right. And just personally, Richard and I agreed that this probably wouldn't have worked for us as students. For the two of you, would this have worked back in your school days, this kind of model?
Oh, that's a good question. You know what? For the most part, yes. But I think the subjects where I was weakest, probably not. I think I would have avoided doing any chemistry homework and spent all day doing the fun stuff that I liked.
Yeah.
Well, and we talk about EQOA tests. I wonder if the kids taking those tests are just the ones that make it through the year, the top students in that class. I wonder if we have kids moving on out of that class because they aren't disciplined enough or they aren't ready for independent learning in that way. So by the time we get to the end of the school year, you've just got kind of the kids that are going to excel at that anyway.
Good point.
That is such a good point, because maybe kids are self-selecting here and maybe parents are selecting for them, right? You know your kids, mm-hmm, yep. You're a parent, you know if this might work for your kid. Maybe your kid's a high-performing athlete for whom this kind of schedule works, and maybe your kid really needs a lot of supervision. Parents know.
Talking about Ontario Place, new documents suggest that the province is considered, or that they considered, filling in a portion of Lake Ontario to create a new development space. It's about 25 acres. And this was, as they say, a potential opportunity. It is subject to change, so it's not necessarily happening. But Amanda, do you think it's the reclaiming of the lake that is upsetting people, or is it the kind of lack of transparency that seems to be happening around this project?
I think there's a couple dozen professional protesters and activists who have moved into talking about, like, literally, like, unless you've stepped foot in Ontario Place and on over the last year, like, I don't even want to hear from you about it at this point, to be honest. I think most people have, like, written that area off of the city. It's unfortunate. The idea that we could animate it and have people go there, and yes, that requires parking lots and all kinds of things. People can drive to it. I think there's a group of professional activists around this that continue to make a bunch of noise. This was part of a proposal, allegedly, apparently, which is, you know, that's what happened. Proposals happen. Things don't get considered or used. So I'm not up in arms about any of this. I frankly welcome. I would love to go sit at a spa. I think it's a great idea. It's better than it just being largely unused and people just use it as a bike path, which they still can and will be able to do. So I think this is one area where I actually say, like, kudos to the mayor and the premier, because I think they just looked in the mirror and decided to dial the temperature down on this one and find a way forward. And I think they did a good job on it.
Aaron, do you agree? Have they done a good job on this?
Paving over part of the lake sounds scary to me, honestly. I do use Ontario Place. I head down there. I live fairly close, and enjoying it is great. And a plan to fix it up is super welcomed by me. I think that's a great investment. I don't love the luxury spa idea, mostly just because it's inaccessible for sort of most people most of the time. I could see myself going there once or twice a year, perhaps, but I think, you know, not more than that. And I don't think most people will be using it on a regular basis. But it will block the view and take up a huge chunk of some of the most valuable real estate in the world all the time for the next 95 years. So I am a little concerned about that. And I don't know. I just, you know, you like to see honesty and transparency on these sorts of things. When you are a government that's planning to develop one of the most expensive and beautiful pieces of real estate in the world, I want to see the proposals. I want us to talk about the proposals. So honestly, if phase two, as they call it in these drawings, which is paving over a part of the lake, if that's still a possibility, let's get it out in the open. Let's talk about it. Let's not do that after a contract has been awarded. Like, let's talk about it now.
We are out of time for the Smart Speakers. Thank you, Aaron Morrison, longtime political strategist and now principal at Morrison Comms, and Amanda Galbraith, principal at Navigator and host of Free for All Fridays. Thanks for your time. When we come back, Teddy Wilson and me, Richard Krause, we're going to be talking about the eclipse. I'm still not excited. Teddy is more than excited for both of us.
Yay.
And much more. Stay with us. Lots more to come on The Rush.